Hi, welcome to Virtual Newsmakers. I'm Debbie Ellickson, and I'm here with my co-host Cynthia Seymour, and we're very excited to have our guest on the show, Kevin L. Jackson. Kevin L. Jackson is a world-renowned cloud computing expert, and he has so many accolades behind his name.
Well,
I'm just
thank
going to
goodness.
list a couple of them, and then I'm going to throw it to him to tell more. But he helps people rethink what cloud computing is, and he has an award-winning blog called Cloud Musings. He has been named as one of the top 100 cybersecurity influencer and brands by Analytica in 2015, and HuffPost in 2013 named him one of the top 100 cloud computing experts on Twitter. He knows what he's talking about, let's just say that. So I'm going to throw it over to Kevin to maybe, if you want to say a little bit more about your background, and then also let's also talk about what cloud computing is, because that seems to be a very confusing term for a lot of
Yeah,
people.
absolutely. So first of all, thank you very much for inviting me on your show. This is kind of exciting for me, although I've been working in cloud computing for quite a while. It's just now that it's being, I guess, viewed and adopted by the rest of the world. Because it is kind of confusing, and many times people see it as a technology when in fact it's much more than just technology. So I've started working in cloud computing with the US federal government back in 2008, 2009, when the US federal government decided to look at how to improve its information technology. The then Chief Information Officer, Vivek Kundra, who had also worked in the state of Virginia and in the District of Columbia in leveraging cloud to improve services to the public. And he felt that this model could be expanded for the federal organizations, and basically initiated what was called the Cloud First Mandate, where all agencies had to look at cloud first before they spent any more money on information technology. So cloud is really a model. It is a business model for delivering information technology. It enables ubiquitous access to a shared pool of computing resources, and this access enables all types of business models that are proliferating now.
So just for example, I started personally using the cloud in terms of, I use, Google Documents and things like that. And the reason is because I no longer wanted to be tethered to a desk, as we were speaking about earlier, but I wanted my information to be accessible to me anywhere in the world as long as I had an internet connection. And it grew into storing my photographs there, storing most of my documents are stored in the cloud. And then I started to use so much space, I ended up I'm paying for it on a monthly basis, but I'm no longer having to buy hardware anymore and hard drives and all of that kind of stuff. What, so for the average lay people, Can you outline that so that people understand how this impacts them?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most insidious things that has sort of infiltrated our entire society mm-hmm. is the app.
Yeah.
So you have a smartphone and you have something to do. The first thing you say is there an app for that?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And what you're asking in reality is there a software application that can help me with this specific need or this specific process? Now, before cloud, mm-hmm. there were applications, but then you would need the infrastructure to run that that application.
Right.
So you would go buy a computer. Oh, and then you need to have a network in order to connect to the computer. And then you would need to go buy some storage in order to store the information that you
right.
can use with that computer. And then there could be more and more services that you would need in order to support that process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cloud computing abstracts all of that work mm-hmm. away from the application. So the computer is sitting in a data center at the cloud service provider like Google or Amazon mm-hmm. or Microsoft. The application is sitting there also, but you're able to get sort of a window into that application that you can share, so you don't have to buy the entire application. You
right.
just buy the piece that you're using.
Right.
You don't have to buy the hardware. You don't have to buy the storage. In fact, you don't have to buy the people to run the application.
Right.
The service is delivered to you as a service, and you only pay for what you use mm-hmm. when you use it. And that's the app. And you can take that app and download it onto your computer. You can download it on your smartphone. You can reach the app on your television. And the underlying global internet makes it ubiquitous. No matter where you are, you can right. access that app. And the power of the app is transformed business because now you don't need the capital. Before cloud, you would need to get somebody or to give you the money, or if you had the money yourself, to capitalize your business. You needed to have that money before you did anything. And cloud has removed that barrier okay. to business.
Got it.
So now all you need is a great idea, and you can take it to market, and you can take it to market globally.
Well, and it changes the way that we work, too, because if we're, like I said, if we're no longer tethered to a bunch of boxes at our desk, mm-hmm. for example, or a mainframe that's running off in some closet that's connecting all the computers in an office,
right?
But that, you know, suddenly we're able to work from our phones, and we're able to manage our lives and our working experience out in the field, so to speak. So it really, I think it alters that industrial mindset of, you know, feeling like we have to work 9 to 5 in a cubicle. On the other hand, it opens us up to working anywhere, anytime, all the time.
Yeah, right. So, and I mean, society has gone through multiple phases, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the agricultural phase, we were connected to the land. There mm-hmm. was a physical connection, and that's how you work. That's how you gain money. That's how you made a living. As we transitioned into the industrial age,
mm-hmm.
the center of your work life became the factory. But yet,
right.
yet again, it's a physical location that you were connected to. Now, we have transitioned to the information age and the world of the internet.
Right.
So you're no longer connected to a physical location, but you are connected to information and data. And as long as you can get access to that information and data, you can work anywhere. And not only can you work anywhere, you can reach anyone from anywhere. So it's a complete transformation. And you see it in the new businesses that are coming up. Companies like Uber, they are not, it's not really a taxi company. The taxi company of old was connected to physical items. It was a physical vehicle, it was a physical driver, and you you worked within a local area. Uber transforms that dependency to physical things into an information exchange. So Uber is really an information business. It collects data from sources, and those are the people that want transportation, and delivers that to sinks, and these are people that want to provide transportation, and gets them together. So it's really going from a physical exchange to an information exchange. Airbnb does exactly the same thing. People that want to provide a place to live and people that want a place to live.
Right.
The internet commerce, things like Amazon and Walmart.com and Alibaba, what do they do? They don't, their business is not really the physically taking content and delivering it to you.
Right.
They're finding people that want to sell things and connecting them to people that want to buy things.
Right.
Okay. So that's the true power of the internet and of the cloud.
So it's really like thinking outside of the box, literally. We're no longer limited to office boxes. We're no longer limited to a taxi company having dispatchers and all these garages and whatnot. And we're no longer limited to a hotel front desk being the only way people can get connected to a bed. And as far as the stores, we never have to even get in a car or go to a shopping center. It's killing the retail on traditional retail as we know it. And I think that's sort of there, and it's challenging a lot of these other models as we know it, even banking.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a bank called the world's largest bank. You have any idea what the largest bank is in the world?
What is it?
PayPal.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
All right.
My favorite bank.
And it's completely virtual, right?
Yeah.
So by eliminating all of these physical aspects of business, these physical artifacts of business, that reduces the cost of entering and running a business.
Of course.
Eliminating the capital expenditure and supports a great influx of innovation across all business lines. So cloud computing is really a revolutionary business model that leverages the parallel and global nature of cloud computing.
Wow. I mean, it's almost amazing just to think about that. In fact, you know, 20 some odd years ago, I worked on Wall Street, and in order to be an investor, you had to go through them, and they were all doing all of these trades and whatnot, and all the trades were being recorded on paper at the end of the day. I mean, it was just really, you know, and now I have an app. There's an app for that on my phone called Robinhood, which is commission free. I don't know how, but it is. And you can, any person now can get on and set up an account and make trades and watch the stock market and look at how their investments are doing without even having anything to do with Wall Street per se at all.
Right.
So it's almost like the Amazon.com or whatnot of Wall Street investing. And, yeah. you know, I just, what has happened is marvelous, and I think that a lot of most people can't really even wrap their heads around this massive yeah. shift.
Well, and Cynthia is in, I've envy her because she's in a place that seems to be, Florida seems to be really super connected to the cloud. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that when I look at some of the movers and shakers on the internet, a lot of them come from her area. But let's, how do you bridge the gap with, I call them the more traditionalists, the people who prefer the physical business model,
right.
who are really, really struggling. There's businesses, I mean, there's a ton of businesses that are really struggling with this concept. How do they adapt? How do they get past their own fear to jump on board, or what happens to them if they don't?
Well, you have to, that's a great question, mm-hmm. because humans, it's human nature to be afraid of change.
Mm-hmm.
And cloud computing, the information age, is the most profound change that our species has gone through.
Yeah.
And it's very disconcerting because it removes the physical aspects of just about everything. Mm-hmm. But from another point of view, it enhances and emphasizes the importance of communications. Another area that cloud has revolutionized is human-to-human communication. Look at us. We mm-hmm. have a person in Florida. We have a person in Edmonton. I'm sitting outside of Washington, D.C. We're communicating. We're seeing each other. We're mm-hmm. talking. We're exchanging ideas. And we're using a platform on the cloud that essentially costs nothing.
Right.
The economic model of cloud is enhancing the ability of humans to communicate. If you can communicate better, you reduce the friction, then you can increase the exchange of our brain power. We're linking our brain power. And that's supporting and improving our society much faster, much quicker, because we've just removed the shackles of physicality. We
right.
don't have to be sitting in the same room. So once again, if you're working a business that's dependent upon a physical aspect, you need to rethink that business with respect to communications. Because business is nothing more than leveraging communications to understand what your constituents, what your market needs, and then delivering the information of how you can deliver the service to address that need of the marketplace.
Hmm.
Once you do that, you can transition your business to a cloud-based environment. And the thing that's killing the traditional businesses is all the sunk costs that they have made in the physical infrastructure. They're still trying to pay for
yeah.
that capital that they needed to get started. And that's why born in the cloud businesses are eating just virtually eating
yeah.
the lunch of all of your traditional businesses.
Because they're still paying operating costs and expenses.
Exactly. They're paying yeah. for that physical, not just the physical that they're using, but the physical that they've used for the last 10 years.
Right.
But there are businesses that are physical, whether you know, regardless. There's nothing that's going to make a construction crew
virtual.
Right.
Operate in the crowd. I mean, I'm in Oil and Gas Central here. Our
yes.
whole province that I live in mm-hmm. is our oil and gas drives the economy for the country.
Right.
And oil and gas is a physical thing. And this is where I see some of these businesses not thinking they need the cloud, but you nailed it in the sense that you need it for communications.
Mm-hmm.
You need it for recruiting people, because if you're recruiting people who are under, you know, any age, really, nobody's picking up a newspaper to read the career section anymore.
No.
They're going on Kijiji or Craigslist.
Yeah.
And so those are, there's still that traditional business that's never going to be anything but physical, but they still need the cloud too, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely, because first of all, yeah, there are things that are physical. You still need to build a building that's physical. You still need to farm and grow crops. That's physical.
Mm-hmm.
But the physical activities can be reduced to a specific region, typically 50 to 100 mile radius. But the heart of a business is the intellectual capital, the data, the understanding of how to do that particular business, the business process. So if you leverage the cloud to hold and exchange information about the business process, and then separate the physical aspects of the business into workable regions, and connect those regions through the cloud, now you can revolutionize what you do. You can have that meet the physical requirement of delivery. You can also meet the regional or local expectations or preferences, but overlay that with the best business model, the best processes, the exchange of information, so that you can understand the difference of doing that physical business in California versus doing that physical business in Rome, Italy, versus doing it in Rome, Texas. So you blend both worlds.
So there is some sort of capital needed to transfer into the cloud, I imagine, because, I mean, I'm looking every day you hear these headlines in the airline industry, and I'm still today, in fact, I sent the whatever their governing body is, I forgot the acronym right now, I sent them a tweet the other day.
Right.
How many people have to die and how many planes have to crash before, you know, the black box is, you know, it's computing, you know, it's, why does it have to be in this thing on the plane? Why can't it be?
That just makes no sense to me at all.
How much money has to be invested and how much is life worth for an industry to do that? And that's just an example of one of many, right?
But no, but it's a huge issue because we're in this transformation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at Microsoft. Microsoft is one of the largest software companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Their business model was to create physical boxes and physical CDs.
Right.
And get you to give them money so they could deliver that physical box to you so that you could install it on your own computer. That's a business model, and they made their money on software by renewals and maintenance. There was a long tail of payments. They fought tooth and nail against cloud because it broke their business model.
Yeah.
Because the new business model for delivering software was give me a URL, give me a browser, and download it.
Yeah.
Okay. So their whole infrastructure was built around the old business model. and they had to basically get rid of that sunk cost to jump into the new model.
And it
took firing their CEO before they actually changed. That has to go on across every business.
Yeah.
Every company.
Yeah.
That's why it hasn't happened in the airline industry yet.
Well, and Microsoft is a little backwards because none of their components match up to one another. So just Outlook as an example, use the Outlook email, which is separate really from Outlook contacts, which is kind of maybe a little tied into the Outlook calendar, but it's kind of hard to figure, you know, and then you have to have this separate Excel and this separate Word, you know, and all these different things, and they're all separate instead of integrated as one wonderful, exquisite of intermeshing of ways that we work. And I'm like,
So that intermeshing, the system integration, okay, before cloud was done by people, and every connection was unique, right? Mm. In cloud computing, in the new world, integration is done through a technology that's called Application Programming Interfaces, APIs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
APIs connect software, all right? And that's what connects the cloud.
Mm.
You can consume any type of information technology service through an API.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the integration that was done before with humans and one-of-a-kind activities mm-hmm. are now being parallelized and made into industrialized mm-hmm. through APIs. So that's why you'll hear people saying we are now in an API economy.
Yeah, okay that's interesting.
And that's on the cloud. So you can use an API to provision a computer, to provision storage, to provision an application, to communicate. You use APIs to connect Facebook to Twitter. use APIs to look at your movies on Netflix. So that's what's happening.
So it's almost like they need APIs that connect, because Google is much better about it, honestly. I mean, it is very easy to shift to the calendar, and it connects extremely well to the email, which connects extremely well to documents. And
right.
And it's all part of a, even just the social media aspects of it, the Google Plus connects to YouTube, you know, there's a little stuff going on there, but you know, that connectivity or that seamlessness, I think is where I'm hoping is where we're going.
That is, and that's driven by APIs. As I said, we're in the API economy.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay, so with all of our information being stored in this cloud. Pictures, music, videos, and all of our documents. What is there a downside to that?
Oh yeah, there's a huge downside because you're no longer in one place. You're everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and it's very difficult to protect everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you're seeing such a huge rise in security breaches and things like malware and ransomware, because the bad guys, I call them Mr. Black Hat, mm-hmm. realize that society doesn't know how to protect its information that exists everywhere. This highlights yet another transition that we're going through with respect to information technology. Most companies before cloud built their own IT infrastructure. They collected information from their customers and they put it in their own data centers.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this this wall and moat approach to information security. And what do I mean? Well, imagine a castle.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's inside the castle is protected and friendly and safe.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that's outside the castle are enemies. It's bad. So you built a wall and a moat around to protect what's inside. Well, that's what we did with our information technology. It was called an infrastructure-centric model for security,
mm-hmm.
where you would use firewalls and passwords and all types of processes to keep the bad people outside of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then anyone that was inside the castle, they could use the information because they were trusted.
Yeah.
Well, what cloud has done, it has forced companies to say, I can no longer work inside the castle. I have to work with all of the people that are outside the castle. These are the people that are on the cloud, right?
Right.
Because everybody has a smartphone, and they're not just using their smartphone inside the castle.
Right.
They're going out in their horse and galloping across the fields, and we still need to reach them, all right? So now I need to send data to the people outside of the castle. So my infrastructure-centric security doesn't work. And that's where Mr. Black Hat jumps on it, and they grab that data, and they grab that information, and they use it against us. So companies need to transition to what's known as a data-centric model for securing the information. And this involves the use of encryption. You need to encrypt the data when it's inside the castle, you got to encrypt the data when it's going outside the castle, and you got to encrypt the data when it's sitting on a device, your smartphone, while you're riding on a horse, right?
Wow.
So this is another huge transition because let's look at retail.
Mm-hmm.
The retail industry kept information about credit cards inside the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Now they got to send that information outside the castle. But it's all of their systems have been designed to use unencrypted information. So now they have to redesign all of the systems to use encrypted information. It takes time and it takes money.
We're seeing a lot of examples of that right now.
Right.
Too.
So you see it not just in retail, you see it in healthcare, you see it in all of your personally identifiable information. And that's
government too.
In government too, absolutely. So all of our institutions have to transition from a single infrastructure-centric mode of protecting our data
to
a data-centric mode that leverages encryption and infrastructure protection. And this is why all of these battles and over encryption are important. Just like the when the US FBI wanted to break into the iPhone of the San Bernardino terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI was basically saying, look, in order for us to protect you, we need to understand how to break into the encryption of all these companies.
Mm-hmm.
While the company is saying, look, if I allow you to break into my encryption, then nothing is safe from you.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a huge tension being set up between and within society, and that is why.
And I'm thinking all they have to do is hire a black hat and it's done.
Yep,
or teenagers, they know how to get around any kind of like whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was advising my high school that I went to in their technology advisory committee, and they came to that we were sitting at a table and they were complaining about how the kids were able to get past all of their security measures every night and still get onto the internet and do whatever they wanted to on the internet, and that they were able to hack through it. And I laughed and I said, those are the ones that are going to be paid the most and giving you donations in the future.
Yeah,
they're looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, Phillips Andover's head of schools teaches a course in hacking. And the ones that are it's a standing room only course. There's a waiting list to get in this course. And Miami-Dade Public Schools, one of the newest programs that's being taught in high school is there's several high schools that are, there's like two or three mm-hmm. high schools that are specifically dedicated toward internet security.
Yeah.
Teaching kids these concepts. So
if you look on LinkedIn,
mm-hmm.
LinkedIn mm-hmm. also owns Lynda for professional mm-hmm. training.
Uh-huh.
The number one job in 2015 for people to get trained up on, the number one job is cloud computing, anything related to cloud computing. And it wasn't even on a list in 2014.
I can believe that. That's crazy. And, you know, here we are complaining about, oh, there are no more jobs and all the jobs are in China and blah, blah, blah. You know what? Yesterday's jobs are in China or wherever they are. And tomorrow's jobs haven't even been created yet. So.
And tomorrow's jobs have no physical aspect to it.
Right. So. We're in a massive shift, a massive change, and yet we're still teaching our kids in this in-the-box approach when they're so facile with this out-of-the-box mode mm-hmm. of thinking. I'm raising a 7-year-old right now, and her way of thinking is no more in line with what she's having to endure on a daily basis as a student in the public school system, unfortunately. And I can only hope that there is a I'd like to if you could help us envision a little for the next generations, where are these jobs? How do they prepare themselves for these jobs when they're not in a school system that is?
So funny you should mention that. I have three children. My mm-hmm. oldest is 35. My middle son, he's out in Washington State. My middle son is in Louisville, Kentucky. And my daughter is still with us. She's finishing up her second year in college.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest son, he sort of, you know, went through puberty pre-cloud. Right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So he has a very tight connection to physical things.
Yeah.
In fact, he used to work as a groundskeeper at a golf course, right?
Okay, all right.
Today what he does, he is a stonemason, and he does granite counters. And he really loves this, you know, and he loves working outside as
right.
well. So my middle son, is about 5 years younger mm-hmm. than my oldest son. And he actually grew up, came of age in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
right? Just when the internet was coming in play and pre-cloud, right?
Right.
But, and he also grew up with the iPhone and mm-hmm. iEverything. So he's an Apple bigot.
Okay.
He really is an Apple bigot. But he is also a stuntman. In high school, he did cheerleading, okay?
Okay.
And he was a stuntman.
Oh, that's cool.
And one of the key most he does competitive cheering. He has two world championship rings, right?
Wow.
And he was at the University of Louisville. They're world renowned for cheerleading. And he's a cheer coach. He has five teams that he runs. But when he was in high school, one of the most competitive aspects of cheerleading was the music. The music and the choreography. All right. So he built the skill set of mixing music.
Going
on the internet, downloading, taking samples of different music, mixing it together, and creating the routines.
That's cool.
Right. He became nationally renowned in doing that.
He started
a business when he was in high school where high school and college teams would send him sort of a concept.
Uh-huh.
And he would use the internet to download samples, to create music, and to put it on these step sheets.
Uh-huh.
And he would email it back to the companies.
That's
and then
cool.
They would do electronic transfer of money into his bank account.
So okay. He gets it. He's on that page.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And he does that today. That's what he does as a career. He's a cheer coach, and that's what he does. So that's my son that grew up in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
My daughter is about 10 years behind them.
Yeah.
So she was born in the early 90s, but she became of age in the early 2000s, right?
Yeah, so she's a mobile baby.
So what does she do? She does video editing online. She has two studios on YouTube. She streams. She plays games online.
Yeah.
These multiplayer games online.
Yeah.
And she streams while she's playing. People log on and watch her.
Okay. So she's like Kudai Time.
Yeah, that's killer. That's cool.
Okay. So her business is video editing, digital video editing.
That's great.
And that's where her future is. So just in my three children, based upon what society was doing around them, you could see how their whole view of the world has changed.
See that with my 18-year-old son and my 7-year-old daughter, because he understands. He's a Google age kid, like internet. I think there is a massive difference in mentality between the internet age and the mobile age. My daughter is 7, and everything for her is mobile. And by the time she was 2, she understood search. I mean, that, you know, information was search, and that, you know, just that one concept alone is it's just magnificent. So
just like I was telling, so my middle son will go on Google to search for everything. My daughter goes on YouTube to search for everything.
Yes, exactly. Mine does too. If she wants to know how to build something in Minecraft or anything she wants to learn how to do, she YouTubes it. She looks it up in YouTube. And so here we are with children being relegated to this classroom environment and tested to death that could learn everything they want to know on YouTube.
If we need to change our mode of transferring information to our children, because it's much more efficient and much more effective to do multi-channel training through tools like YouTube.
Totally. So I think there's a lot of excitement about this, and I think there's an equal amount and maybe even more so fear of the change in older generations.
Oh, yeah.
So to give our kids and the future generations hope, in terms of the jobs, I think it's critical for them to understand that all of this media and information they can now draw from and evolve right. themselves forward.
Right, so and that's why social media is so important.
Yeah.
So how can we take this one step further, and maybe this is how we end the show, mm-hmm. how do we take this fear factor and kind of appease the people who are still afraid of transitioning?
Right, right.
Like the airline industry. Well, how do you make them transition
yeah.
away from this brick and mortar model?
Well, the fear is caused by lack of information, lack of knowledge. So the only way forward is through education.
Hmm.
And this means you have to just jump in and do it. And one of the easiest ways is through social media. Because in social media, you can talk to people that you want to talk to anyway. Hmm. You can learn how to manipulate the tools of the information age. There are downsides to it, but you have to break through the fear of letting your information go and learn how to protect your information, because that's the wave of not the future, that's the wave of now.
Mm-hmm.
That will also instruct you on how to better communicate with your children and mm-hmm. how to better operate in the world of business, because it's not if we're going here. We are already here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's not that we need to, one, make America great again. We need to be the world. It's not even just America anymore. This is this planet. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And I sort of I have huge problems with the assumption that America is not great.
I do too.
It's also important to understand that this is not an American thing. This is a global thing.
Exactly.
Europe is great. America is great. Canada is great. Asia is great, because we are all one society.
Yeah.
And we are building a global society through the power of cloud computing.
Wow, that's exciting.
I love it.
Well, you know, and it's funny, I always think I was just born in the wrong generation, because you know, because for some reason it's easier for me to wrap my head around where we're going,
yeah,
than it is for me to understand why we're hanging on to the past. So,
yeah,
this has been absolutely terrific. And at the end of each show, we like to ask kind of a deep question.
Okay.
If you could offer one tip for people on how they might take what we've talked about and move forward next week, if you could give them a goal for next week to evolve forward, what would that tip be?
Actually, I think the tip would be to get 300 friends on Twitter.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because with about 300 friends on Twitter, you go outside of your immediate circle.
Okay.
You start interacting with people with different thoughts, different ideas.
Yeah.
But on the other side, you will start getting bombarded with information about things that you have never heard of.
Yeah.
Maybe things you don't want to hear of, but it gives you a broad view of what's going on in the world.
Mm.
And with that broad view, you'll start identifying things that interest you. And once you find an interest, you're on your way.
Oh, that's nice. And this would be for all generations?
Scary. I would probably want to keep it above 13.
Yeah. I hear you there. Yeah.
But that's another thing that parents struggle with. You can't shield your children from the internet. And if you don't let them go on the internet, you will cripple them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I agree there.
And there, it takes a bit of maturity. And only the parent can understand when their child is mature enough to delve into this brave new world. Mm-hmm. But 15 and 16 is way too late. And, yeah. You know, 7 and 8 is probably way too early.
Right.
So,
she has a lot of access to the internet, but behind, like, with us around her.
Yes.
So, and I look at, I mean, just this whole Minecraft thing that they're all doing now. They're learning concepts about physics and chemistry and coding and digital design, 3D, design and all sorts of things from this game, perceived game. What's really happening is they're learning and discovering through that game.
That sounds like a future show, Cynthia.
Yeah. Maybe we will do a Minecraft show. So anyway, this has been absolutely terrific, Kevin. We really appreciate you joining us and helping to.
Yes.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Help create more awareness about this brave new world we're in. So
please invite me back again. I enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you so much, and we'll stay connected.
Okay.
And how should people reach out to you, and what are the ways that you might be able to help them? How can people reach you? What's the best way?
So if you're going to go on Twitter next week, I'm Kevin_Jackson.
Okay.
I'm also on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And my company is GovCloud Network. And we are on my blog is probably the best way to get to all of those sites. And that's blog.govcloudnetwork.com.
blog.govcloudnetwork.com. Oh, this is terrific. Thank you so much.
Well, let's
round out our show. I'd like to say adios to everybody. Thank you, Debbie, for kicking it off. And we'll see you next week on Virtual Newsmakers. Talk to you soon.